Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers. Glad you could be with us this week. My special guest today is Kenneth Ween. We're going to be discussing his book, Memoirs from the Asylum. He's got a lot of interesting things to say to ex-offenders through his writing. I think you're going to enjoy that. Remember that the Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. We're going to be right back with Kenneth Ween right after this on the Journey of Hope. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. I have on the phone with me Kenneth Ween. Kenneth, Princeton educated. He studied economics there. And most recently, I think he's been a psychotherapist as well. And most recently, he's written some books that are, I think you'll find, of interest here on the Journey of Hope. Kenneth, welcome to the Journey of Hope.
And thank you for having me.
Well, it's a thrill to have you here. First, start with this. If you could just give us a little bit of your background and how it is you came to write and so forth. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, sure. Well, as you mentioned, I have my bachelor's from Princeton, and then after that, I went on to get a doctorate in psychology, and I'm also an ordained minister. Of course, over the years, working with people as a psychologist and as a pastoral counselor, I became more and more involved in the human drama, the human experience. So when I tired of being in the helping professions, I decided to draw on my knowledge of people and my love of words. I'd always loved words. I grew up reading, you know, and so I had always wanted to write anyway. So I decided to combine those, and I started writing. First, I put together an anthology of poetry, short stories, even a couple little plays, essays, and I called it Songs for My Father. One of the things I had to deal with in my own life was a very overpowering father, and I realized that I couldn't fully express myself until I had written that book to him. About that point, my wife and I had also decided to move. We had grown up in New England, moved from there, our adult lives were spent in the New York area where I had practiced. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we moved to Arizona, in part because of health concerns. As we grew older, we found that cold, damp weather wasn't quite letting our bones work the way we wanted them to.
So, I'm starting to relate to that.
So we moved out to Arizona, where it was nice and warm and dry, and we promised ourselves that we'd never have wet, cold feet again. And I started writing, and my first novel, Widow's Walk, which is about a woman restarting her life. And not surprisingly, the people who know me, it was also a book that wrestled with issues of spirituality and religion and the difference between them. And also, not surprising to people who know me, it dealt with issues of love and sexuality. Mm-hmm. The next book, which is one that I had wanted to write for years, and anyone who's read it and read the authors afterward understands that, is a book called Memoirs from the Asylum. Mm-hmm. It is set primarily in a psychiatric hospital, but it really is about the fear and the feelings of being overwhelmed that keep a person from living. I think it's the book that's really relevant, in a sense, to the topic of your podcast, because it is about freedom after you get out of the institution. It's about people choosing.
Right.
And I guess the message of it is that freedom is not about, well, it's not about the things we do. It's not about simply, oh, I get to pick whether I'm going to eat a hamburger or a bologna sandwich. It's not about whether I get to have sex tonight or not, or even if I get to go to the bar and have a drink tonight or not. It's about having choice and a sense of choice and purpose in our lives. Mm-hmm. And one of the themes of the book is that in a way, the people who are working in this psychiatric hospital are as much inmates of it as are the patients. And that realization, by the way, came to me in part of my internship training as a psychologist when they gave me keys, a big key that I could open the door. Mm-hmm. And they told me to hang on to it because that was the way they could tell the staff from the inmates.
Wow.
What they didn't tell me at the time, and I think is really much more to the point, was that while I was fumbling with that giant key to unlock these doors and grates, the patients grabbed an old metal hanger, bent it once, stuck it into the locks, and flipped them open with much more ease than I could manage. So it was all about how we think of ourselves, I guess. Well, anyway, that's what the book is about. Freedom, choice, and oh, how important making that choice to be a free person in one's own mind. Mm-hmm. And what that means and the responsibility one takes for the choice. And I always do a thing about the word responsibility anyway. I love to talk about that word. Mm-hmm. Because years ago, when I was just starting out, really, I was still in grad school, I was seeing a family, and the patient of record, the person who had been institutionalized, wouldn't even come to these family sessions. But his parents and his brother, who was about 11 at the time, and his sister, who was in her teens, did come. And it was very clear to me, as I think it would have been to anybody who met this family, that the father had a lot of issues. Mm-hmm. And one day, he was all upset because somebody had left the light on in the microwave. You know, that little tiny bulb in the microwave, right. It's he went after the youngster, the 11-year-old. He said to him, Seven, I'm talking about responsibility. Do you understand what that word means? And he slammed his hand down on the table next to him. And the little boy looked up at him and said, yes, I did. Responsibility is how you are aware of the needs and feelings of others and how you respond to them.
From the mouths of babes.
Something about which you, Dad, know nothing.
Wow. Well, you bring up a lot of good points here, Ken. So let me just stop you right there. This book, Memoirs from the Asylum, this is the book that, after I looked over your materials that I was most interested in, and I have it here in front of me. It is an excellent read. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about what happens after the institutional part of someone's life. I think there are a lot of analogies you could draw between someone who had been in a psychiatric facility and someone who had been in prison because of their limited freedom and people doing things for them and so forth. There comes a point where an individual, once released, has to put that behind them. And drawing on your skills as a psychologist, what would you say to my audience in terms of doing that, of taking that experience and, we don't ever really want to forget it and we can't forget it, but how can we put it in the past and move on? I personally have found it very difficult to do. And I know many, many other ex-offenders that feel the same way. What would be your advice along those lines?
Well, I think the first advice is to say, sit down and have a real talk with yourself about who you are and where you want to go. As you know from reading memoirs, my one character, my narrator character, realizes that he has some very important unfinished business. And that is to visit the place where his cousin, who had also been his best friend, had committed suicide. Mm-hmm. I won't spoil the book by telling the twist, but, in a very real sense, that gives him purpose. It allows him to literally, travel across the country and travel away from. Now, on the other hand, just to contrast it, we have Buford Ablos, who is the physician, the psychiatrist in training at the institution. And what we realize is he has been institutionalized in his own way. Because of his father's depression, he's been sent to boarding school. And we realize that even though he appears to be free, even though he has the trappings of freedom and even the trappings of a good job, he's really the one who's not going to be able to walk away because he will never let go of the past. And so therein lies the secret, I think, to let go of the past that brought us into the institution in the first place. And that means figuring out who we are, where we want to go, what we want to do, what we want to accomplish. Because each one of us has things that we want to accomplish. Now, again, we have to be responsible. We have to understand that there are consequences. If what we want is to go out and get high again and go joyriding again, we're obviously going to end up in the same place.
Right.
But if we understand that we have to figure out who we want to be, that gives us a starting point. Part of that wonderful sense of freedom, that knowing where I want to go gives me as a person. For example, when I retired, came out to Arizona and said, hey, I want to write novels now. Out of that, what it gave me was the sense that I could now look, I could explore. In fact, today, I'm not in Arizona today, I'm in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. I'm at a writer's retreat where I get to just spend my day working on my writing. And again, it's something I chose. I look. I say, oh, what does it mean to be a writer? Once I've decided I'm going to be a writer, then I can ask myself, what does that mean? How do I do that? But if I never set a goal, if I never have a sense of who the real authentic and woman is going to be, then I'm constantly left going with my impulse, going with the flow of what's happening at the moment. I'm never really making a choice to be who I am.
Okay.
So that's my advice.
Well, Kenneth, let me stop you right there. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I've got some more questions for you, okay? My name's Rodney Mathers. We're going to be back in just a second right here with Kenneth Wien on The Journey of Hope.
When did I get, where did I, how was I caught in?
Hey everybody, I want to remind you that you can always get in touch with me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Drop me a line.
When I know that you're not true, and why should I call your name when you're the blame for making me blue?
Yes. Oh, my friends, drive a low rider. And the low rider is a little lower. Take a little trip, take a little trip, take a little trip.
Discussing his books, particularly his book, Memoir from the Asylum, I want to kind of jump to your earlier book, though, Kenneth. I want to talk about, I've noticed that you bring up issues of relationships with fathers. You did it in memoirs, and you also have this anthology of short stories, I believe, and poetry, Songs for My Father. And my question for you is, I have found that many ex-offenders have had difficult relationships with their fathers. Now, I'm no psychologist, or I'm not even an astronaut, but it's just something that I've noticed over the years. And is that prevalent in shaping the way that we make decisions as we become adults and are adults, our relationships with our fathers?
Oh, our relationship, men particularly, but I think all people, our relationships with our fathers are incredibly important. And, of course, the absence of a relationship is also incredibly important.
Well, that's really the root of my question, Kenneth. You know, if we did have this kind of adversarial relationship with our father, or there was an absent father, so I guess my question, what now? So what do you do now? How do we handle that now?
Okay, let me just go back a little autobiographical stuff first.
All right.
When I was 13 years old, my father, who was very abusive at times, let loose on me in a way that just went beyond the limits of what I was capable of handling. And he did it in a very foolish way, because it ended up with me holding an axe.
Oh, my gosh.
And I came very, very, very close to burying that axe in his head.
Whoa.
I wouldn't have, and ruined my life, I suppose, except that there was another man there who distracted me. And that man, his name is Max. Max is a very good example of my answer to your question. You find other fathers. Over the course of my life, what I did was I looked for father figures. And I looked for father figures who could give me emotionally what I needed. Actually, the first was not Max. He was in the list. He was not all that available. The first was actually my clarinet teacher, mm-hmm. who was a wonderful man. Didn't learn much about playing the clarinet from him, but I learned an awful lot about life from him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In college, in high school, I went away to boarding school, institutionalization, probably saved my father and my life. In boarding school, I had a couple teachers that I looked to. In college, I had a couple professors who were very, very important to me. And all through my life, until I got to a point where I could hear the advice that it was time to be my own good father. And after that, I didn't need to look for other people so much.
Right.
But
right.
The answer to your question is that all of us need that restorative relationship. And we provide it to one another. Now, I've never had a substance abuse problem, so my contact with 12-step programs has always been tangential, bringing clients to their first meeting, things like that, going to celebrate their anniversaries, things like that. But it has always struck me that the relationship between sponsor and member of one of those 12-step programs mm-hmm. is very much a parental one. And that the 12 steps, in large part, consist of teaching the person how to be an adult the same way a good parent would have taught that person to be an adult if they had been a good parent.
Decisions.
So I think that when it works, and it often does, as they say, it works, it works. If you work it, it works.
That's right.
The reason that it does work is that those people who really commit to AA or any of the 12-step programs, what they're really doing is committing to accepting a substitute good parent into their lives and into their hearts and into their souls.
Excellent. Very good. Very good advice. I want to bounce back up to Widow's Walk for just a second. Now, I haven't read that book, but my understanding is that it's about a family and they have tragedy in their life. And what sort of tragedies and do they overcome the tragedies? Those are the kinds of things that we look for on this program, are people who that can overcome adversity and examples of how to do that. Do we find that in Widow's Walk?
Well, yes and no. There are three members of the family. One is the widow. Her name's Mary. And mm-hmm. Mary, obviously, her tragedies are many because, of course, like any good mother, her children's tragedies are also her tragedies. She starts overcome. She gets involved in a wonderful relationship. And then, I won't again, I don't want to spoil the read, but something happens that drives her back away from spirit and into formalistic religion. Uh-huh. Anybody who knows me knows that I make a very strong distinction between the spirit, in which I believe greatly, the grace of God, in which I truly affirm every day of my life, and religion as something formal with all kinds of rituals. And she falls back away from the spirit and doesn't end so well. Her daughter, who loses her child, her husband leaves her, she falls in love, and that guy turns out to be a cad, which, by the way, I should mention, as a writer, came as a total surprise to me. I thought he was going to be a wonderful guy, and then he turned out to be an absolute horror, spoiled brat of a guy. And she ends up in great pain. But the third member of the family, the third member, who in a sense is the one who is most helpless, the most institutionalized in a sense, is Sean. And Sean, her son, Mary's son, Sean rolls over his Jeep on the way to a brothel in Vietnam. No heroics here. Wow. No great hero. He's on his way. He's one of this wild kid. He and his buddies are on the way. And he suffers a major break in his back. He becomes a quadriplegic.
Wow.
And in a sense, that's the most interesting thing, because part of the message of the book is this: there is hope, even in the worst of cases. He ends up, the book begins, actually, the reason that Mary restarts her life is she's been taking care of Sean, devoting herself to him, to the point where she's going to kill him. Because, you know, if we institutionalize somebody enough, we can do that in a family, too. We don't have to put people in prison to institutionalize them or into a psychiatric hospital. She's taken over his life. And he realizes that he has to get to a rehab. And so he goes. And he ends up married and with children and having a life. Because, wow, you see, in the end, we can choose in the worst of situations. We can choose to make a life for ourselves.
Well, like, so, I said,
yes, in that way, mm-hmm, Sean becomes a real beacon of hope.
Well, Kenneth, all of these books, they just look like I say, I hadn't read Widow's Walk, but Memoirs from the Asylum. These are just excellent books, I believe, for ex-offenders to take a look at. They're good reads. They're fiction, but the underlying message, the deeper meaning, is absolutely apropos for ex-offenders. Wonderful, wonderful books. Got a little humor sprinkled in there. Kenneth, very quickly, tell us about your new book that you're working on.
Well, actually, the newest book will be out within the year, and it's at my publisher now. And it's called Tales from the Dewdrop Inn,
okay,
because there's one in every town.
Okay.
And it takes place, it's set in a local bar. It happens to be a bar in Albuquerque, and I chose Albuquerque because I don't know the town, really. I've spent two nights there, and I really deliberately wanted it to be because there's one in every town. And it is, I think, many of the people who listen to your show will really relate to these people,
mm-hmm,
in this book, because they are people whose lives, they're not bottom of the barrel people. They're not worthless people. They're people who are hanging on and desperately trying to have a life, and they're looking for a place to belong, and that place is the Dewdrop Inn, which is a little neighborhood bar. And those stories of their lives there and their relationship, how the police treat them, for one thing, how people in the community treat them,
mm-hmm,
how they treat each other. And there's a lot of fun, a lot of humor, a lot of just amazingly good-hearted kinds of things. It was a funny book because it came about, somebody asked me to write a piece of flash fiction. That's something very short.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, write us a piece of flash fiction. So I did. And I always, when I write, I always try and have a topic. So I said, okay, how about the meaning of home? What's home? What is a home? Well, I wrote this, and it was just such a beautiful story that the next time somebody asked me to write a piece of flash fiction, I said, gee, I'm going to take those same people and go on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And that one happened to have to do with, they wanted something to do with some sexuality. Well, hey, that's a pretty good topic. And that was the second chapter. And now I have two stories, and they held together, and the characters were so real and so human that I just had to finish the book.
Kenneth, where can we...
So now it's at the publisher.
Where can we get a hold of your books? You got a website. How does someone listening get a hold of your work?
Okay. Obviously, the easiest way is to go to Amazon.com and just put in my name, Kenneth W. Manning, and you can order them. I do have a website. It's http://www.authorkenwee. Again, Wien is spelled W-E-E-N-E, and that's, of course, .com. I can contact my publisher, which I always like to mention them because they're such a nice house. It's called All Things That Matter Press.
Great.
And they're on the web, and All Things That Matter Press publishes books that matter. And that's okay. Why I went with them.
Kenneth Wien, the books are called Widow's Walk, Memoirs from the Asylum, Songs for My Father, and his upcoming book, Tales from the Dewdrop Inn. Kenneth, these are you've got a real talent for writing, and I really enjoyed reading Memoirs from the Asylum. I want to encourage everybody to take a look at Kenneth's material, check out his website, go to Amazon and pick up one of those books, and I think you'll find that that they're fun to read, and in addition to that, there's deeper meaning there that is appropriate for ex-offenders, and as we look to overcome adversity, and as we look for restoring relationships with our father, for example, or learning how to move on from our institutional existence prior to where we're at now. Kenneth Wien, thank you so much for being here, sir.
And thank you for having me, Rodney.
My name's Rodney Mathers. We will be right back after this on The Journey of Hope.
This time the girl is gonna stay.
This time the girl is gonna stay.
This time the girl is gonna stay. For more than just a day.
We've come to the end of another program. I want to thank my special guest, Kenneth Wien. I want to remind you that you can check out his materials. Got some links there listed next to the podcast. Kenneth speaks to ex-offenders through his writing, and very cool stuff. I highly recommend it. You want to be sure and check it out. And I also want to remind you of something. If God is for you, who can be against you? We're going to see you next time with another great program right here on The Journey of Hope.